We continue reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 28, entitled Puranjan Becomes a Woman in the Next Life, text 55. Satvam vihaya mam bandho, gato gramya matir mahin, vicharam padam adrakshi, Saha, that swan. Tva, yourself. Vihaya, leaving. Ma, me. Bando, O friend. Gataha, went. Gramya, material. Mati, whose consciousness. Mahim, to earth. Vicharam, traveling. Param, position. Adrakshi, you saw. Kayachi, by someone. Nirmitam, manufactured. Striya, by a woman. Translation. My dear friend, you are now my very same friend since you left me. You have become more and more materialistic, and not seeing me, you have been traveling in different forms throughout this material world, which was created by some woman. Purport. When the living entity falls down, he goes into the material world, which was created by the external energy of the Lord. This external energy is described herein as some woman or prakriti. This material world is composed of material elements, ingredients supplied by the Mahatattva, the total material energy. The material world created by this external energy becomes the so-called home of the conditioned soul. Within this material world, the conditioned soul accepts different apartments or different bodily forms and then travels about. Sometimes he travels in the higher planetary systems and sometimes in the lower systems. Sometimes he travels in higher species of life and sometimes in lower species. He has been wandering within this material universe since time immemorial, as explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadapaya Bhakti Lata Beach Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 1951. The living entity wanders into many species of life, but he's fortunate when he once again meets his friend either in person or through his representative. Actually, it is Krishna who personally advises all living entities to return home, back to Godhead. Sometimes Krishna sends his representative, who, delivering Krishna's very message, canvasses all living entities to return home, back to Godhead. Unfortunately, the living entity is so greatly attached to material enjoyment that he does not take the instructions of Krishna or his representative very seriously. This material tendency is mentioned in this verse as gramyamati, sense gratification. The word mahim means within this material world. All living entities within this material world are sensually inclined. Consequently, they become entangled in different types of bodies and suffer the pangs of material existence. Om Ajnanati Nandasya Gyanandana Sakya Chanchurun Nivitam Yena Tasmai Shri Shri Chaitanya Mano Nishtam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sa sagrajatam sahagnargatam vitam tam sajivam sadvetam samadutam parijana saitam krishna chitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Sakam Vitam Shcha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tata Kanchan Gorani Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishvanusutadevi Pramanani Ripriye Vanshakalpa Turubhyecha Sakripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasani Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So the living entity is residing with the Lord in the heart of this material body. It is said, just like two swans in the Manasa lake. But since the living being has turned away from the Lord, the living being has become more and more materialistic. And life after life has traveled throughout the universe, Brahmanda Brahmiti Kona, trying to enjoy so many different positions again and again, puna punas charita charvananam, chewing the chewed, that which was already tasted, tasting it again, and then again, and again, and again, and chewing it one more time. So in this way, life after life, we are simply going through the same motions. Srila Prabhupada speaks about the living beings who take their birth as Svedaja, Andaja, Jarayuja, Udbijaja, or those living beings that take their birth from perspiration. Those living beings that take their birth from Anda, from the egg. Those that take their birth from a seed. And those that take their birth from the womb. And all those living beings are all in the same position. All are trying to enjoy sense gratification. From Indra to the Indra Gopa germ, all are trying to enjoy sense gratification. Even the bacteria are feasting on our body, and we have a headache on a Saturday night, and they have a party. Like that, we can see how all the living beings are trying to enjoy the material world. We've also been in that boat for so many lifetimes, but then Bhagyavan Ajeev, then that somehow or other good fortune came into our life. It wasn't our plan, but it was brought in by a Vaishnava who was so determined for us to have it, that in spite of the fact that we said no thank you, no, that's very kind, we are not so interested, it's all right. He just somehow or other penetrated our defense walls and spiritual substance entered into our life. And thus, we find ourselves within the realm of devotional service. Of course, still mixed devotional service. Not pure devotional service. Devotional service mixed with karma and jnana, or devotional service mixed with a desire to enjoy the material energy some way or other. And we are always very conscious of our position, where we are situated right now, and if everything is just in accordance to our desires, and is at least as much as possible. Maybe we can't get the ideal, we'll accept that. Maybe this material world is not a place of enjoyment. Maybe it is dukkhaliyam asaswatam. Maybe it is a temporary place full of misery, but then again, some misery is better than other misery, if you know what I mean. And in this way, we are still selecting. We're selecting our misery. And misery loves company, and before you know it, we are enjoying together the misery of the material world. It takes maturity. It takes maturity to come to the point where one becomes very serious and says, no, I will no longer play with the material energy. It's not worth it. I'm simply going to be very, very serious now about making spiritual advancement. It is this seriousness that has to develop in us. We, like Srila Prabhupada, after the first initiation that he ever gave, in that initiation, people were not quite sure what they were promising, because Srila Prabhupada wrote the promises on a piece of paper the next day. No illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no meat, fish, or eggs, and no frivolous sports. Yes, to be frivolous. Who is not frivolous? Some people are laughing in a little group. Oh, let's see what is happening there. Yes, let's check it out. Frivolous nature is so strong. Always playing, joking, wasting our time. Actually, while the situation is serious, because it ends with death, and that is inevitable. And then when it does happen, everyone is shocked. You know, how could this happen to, of all people, to this person? No, I can't believe it. It happens to every person. Why can't we believe it? This is what Yudhisthira said. Yudhisthira made that point. The most amazing thing is that everyone is seeing that his relatives have died, that so many people died, but it doesn't register that it can happen to us. So, therefore, the situation is serious, because the opportunity is there. Srila Prabhupada sometimes said that just give one lifetime. Just give one lifetime to me. Already so many lifetimes you have done everything you liked. So many lifetimes, so many plans, so many dreams, so many strong desires. No, but I have to do it. I really have to. All right. But one life, just give to me, Srila Prabhupada said. And yet we see that Srila Prabhupada, who took Krishna consciousness completely serious, was also joking. He was also playful. So seriousness doesn't exclude playfulness. Prabhupada also liked Charlie Chaplin. And you know, well, because those are the little things, you know. Do I even have to stop liking Charlie Chaplin? And things like that, just things that are ordinary fun. Sometimes people ask us in a public program when we explain the whole process of Krishna consciousness, and we say that for so many lifetimes the living being has been ensnared and entrapped in trying to enjoy the material energy, and he becomes entangled in so many types of suffering, da, 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 and then he takes the Krishna consciousness and he becomes gradually free from all this entanglement. Then question, what are you doing for fun? Then ask, what are you doing for fun? So it seems so difficult to be serious and to have fun at the same time. But there is so much fun. We do so much for fun. In Amsterdam temple, that little temple, every year there is an arrangement that the first year students come, and then also school programs come to the temple. It's like one after another. And once there was a school class with 13-year-old girls, and it was my turn to give the class. So they were all there, and they didn't really want to be there, but they had to be there from school, if you know what I mean. And I had to listen to some lecture from some old guy. So they looked at me and had a question. Are you ever going to a discotheque? Now, that was a very important question, because I could see if I said no, then I wasn't even worth listening to. Then obviously I was a square and not worth listening to. Whereas if I said yes, then I was in hot water. So finally, I said, no, actually, I don't go because we have a constant party here. I said, it starts early in the morning. We're already dancing and really going for it. Right? At 4 in the morning. Yeah, really? Saved. Saved. So yes, we're looking at fun. We're looking at fun. And it is important that we are realizing that there is some fun. That it is not only prescribed duty, because the word duty was never so popular in my vocabulary. It's your duty. Yes, Mom. I know. We wanted something more than duty. And Srila Prabhupada points out in the introduction of the Nectar of Devotion that everything moves by taste. Because the living being is by nature pleasure-seeking. Anandamai Vyasat. Devotional service is very nice. Of course, we have in Dante, in his writings, he has the emblem of the materialistic person. There is a king who said, rather a king in hell than a servant in heaven. So that sort of sums up the mood of the conditioned soul. To be a servant, to put ourselves on the second plane, to not take any credit, to take the humble position, to adjust completely to the desires of something else, someone else, and to ignore our own desires and to focus on the desires of another person. Do we really want that? I'm sure. Is that fun? Well, it is. It is in so many ways. It is said that a devotee should become a menial servant. And he should take up that role of the menial servant of the spiritual master in Krishna. And that when we are servants of Krishna, that we are making arrangements for Krishna's comfort. So many arrangements for his comfort. And we see there are nice cushions, nicely embroidered, and looking, just to look at them is a pleasure. And to invite Krishna to sit, and there's nice plates and nice things cooked, and so many nice arrangements made for Krishna's pleasure. Everything for Krishna's pleasure. I found that difficult in the beginning. So, for example, Janmashtami. Janmashtami was for me like one of the most difficult days in the year, because we're fasting the whole day, and that's one thing. But besides fasting the whole day, we were also cooking the whole day. And that's just like, you know, what a thing to do. To fast the whole day is one day, but one thing. But then to cook the whole day at the same time, that's torture, I thought. So, yeah, the whole day busy with food while you're fasting, it seemed like torture to me. So it's difficult to put one's own desires aside and just focus on the pleasure of another. It is difficult for us. But if we see the nature of the master that we serve, then it becomes more and more interesting. If one serves a glorious master in a glorious mission, then that service becomes something very inspiring. And just see the nature of Krishna. When the living being turns away from Krishna and goes to the material world, and he says, Krishna, it's all right. Krishna says, no, please don't go. No, Krishna, it's all right. I will be right back. I'll be back soon. Please don't go. No, it's fine. It's fine. Yes, I know what I'm doing. I'll be right back. And then, when the living being goes to the material world alone, Krishna doesn't leave him alone. Krishna comes. As Paramatma, as the super soul within the heart, Krishna accompanies every living being all throughout his endless sojourn in the material world. Krishna remains. And Krishna is always patiently trying, again and again. Although so many times that living being didn't listen to him. If we are trying to instruct someone and they never listen, then at one point you just go, like, I forget it, you know. You never listen. I will not bother with you anymore. But Krishna keeps on trying with us, although we don't listen. So, just see the nature of Krishna. Krishna is so kind and so merciful that Krishna makes endless arrangements to bring back the living beings to the spiritual world. And that is Krishna's occupation. That is what Krishna is doing. What is Krishna doing in this material world? He's simply trying to bring back all the living beings to the spiritual world. That's his full-time occupation. And therefore, being the servant of that Lord, that becomes our service. And no matter what service we do, all service is connected to that service. When one is a pujari, one is not just waving the chamara for the pleasure of Krishna, but one is also drawing in the attention of people to Krishna with that chamara. And one is giving the deities the darshan of the deities and the mercy of the deities to as many people as possible.
That is the Pujari.
All of our services are serving that noble mission of that noble Lord. And because the service is noble, it is easy to perform. Because it touches the heart, then it's easy to do. If there is a noble cause, yes, then we feel called for it. If we can save the whales, then we are ready. Yes, let's go and save the whales and knock on doors. Yes, please, give for the whales. But to really save the whales, that takes more than just knock on some doors and collect some money. Because the whales have to be saved from themselves. This morning someone reminded me of the tour that we made some years ago from Radovich to Scandinavia. And I'll never forget that tour, because on the tour there were videos on the bus. Mahaprabhu had arranged so many videos. And as we were getting close to Scandinavia, there were videos of polar bears and penguins and all these things. And it was, we were going to Scandinavia. So it was exciting. And then there was the movie, it showed penguins. These big ones, you know, that are like 1 meter tall or more. And it said the penguins, they were sitting on the eggs for a long time. And then in the winter it got so cold, -70. It got so cold and it was dark. So cold that the ladies went to the south. And it was the men that stayed behind and sat on those eggs through the cold winter nights. Yes. So, all throughout the winter, they sat on those eggs. Yes. Not moving in the -70 icy polar winds. And then, when the first little ray of sun of spring appeared, then those penguins also went down south to an island and were for a vacation. And then, as the sun was shining and really came through, it heated up those eggs, and suddenly we saw hundreds of eggs lying on the ice, and we saw cracks in the eggs. And then all these little penguins came out and with their big flat feet on the ice. And the ice was sloping, and the penguins immediately, naturally figured it out that these flat feet worked well as skis. And before you knew it, they were skiing down the slope, hundreds of them at the same time, going straight down to the edge of the ice, which was going right into the ocean, and they were flying to the sky and diving. And then this huge killer whale came out of the water and swallowed them all. This movie is one of my big traumas. I'll never forget that trip. God, what a video. And it just brought back so many memories, and I thought, yes, there's always a killer whale in this world. And it's that killer whale that has to be saved. Yes? He has to be saved. And you think you're going to save him by knocking on doors with a list and say, please give a donation to save the whales? You think that money will solve that problem? Prabhupada says it's your Western disease. You have a problem, you throw some money at it, and you think you solved the problem. But that doesn't really solve the problem, because the problem is deeply rooted in the heart. The whale is impure. The whale is hard-hearted. The whale is wallowing in selfishness. Wallowing means you're rolling around in selfishness. So that is the nature of the whale. And the result is that if we really want to take up this mission, to deliver all the living beings of the universe, well, then we've got something to do. And therefore, we will never feel like devotional service. Never. We'll never really feel to be a servant. Never. Even when we are around for years, we will always struggle. Deep down in our heart, we will have still resistance until the day comes that we take up this noble mission. Until we appreciate this noble mission. Until we really start to think about it from somehow or other. It's really wonderful that Krishna is trying to deliver all the living beings in this world. And that I can also help a little bit in this mission. That's the one thing where devotional service becomes suddenly inspiring. That's the thing that can capture our heart. Nothing else can do it, actually. Nothing else. Nothing else can make us into a servant. No matter how much we act. Oh yes, we may act like a butler. Yes, Krishna, he is your salt. Oh yes, Krishna, he is your nice fresh water with tulasi leaves, right? Grown for you in the greenhouse with a special warm lamp for you, for your pleasure, Krishna. But then, still we're looking for our own pleasure also. Again and again. But when we get so absorbed in taking up that noble mission, somehow or other, whatever little bit of comfort we are still taking is simply there to keep us going. It is simply there to keep us going in that mission. Because the mission is so great that one can exhaust all one's energy in that mission. You can give it everything you have, and then there's still need for more. And because of that, it's totally absorbing. And then it's, because it's so absorbing, then even the material desires, which are like dragons in our consciousness, roaming around, haunting us, these material desires, just burning hot, hot dragons burning in our mind, burning in our heart, again and again, pushing us along. These material desires will never stop. They seem to have unendless energy. They seem to never get tired. In fact, they wait till we get tired, and then they get us. Then they get us, with even more energy. And then it's difficult to fight back. When we are tired, and we haven't chanted good rounds for 1 week already, and just then, whoosh, there they are, the material desires coming full force. But if we are so absorbed in this noble mission of the Lord, then everything else disappears. So this is our meditation. How kind is Krishna? How tolerant is Krishna? How patient is Krishna to deal with all these cruel living beings who really don't care about each other, who really are just so hard-hearted that they don't care about each other's suffering at all. Anyway, too bad, so many people die. Like the other day, I was remembering a newspaper which was some years ago, and there was an earthquake in Los Angeles, and many highways collapsed and so on. It was a big thing, and 27 people died, and it was on the front page all over. And then a few pages on the inside of the paper, there was a reference to a tidal wave in Bangladesh, and 500,000 people had been killed. That was on the third page. It was an interesting paper. I still remember that. So, we just don't care. Where's the compassion? Where's the compassion in us? But Krishna, oh, Krishna really has compassion. So we're trying to realize how kind Krishna is, how generous Krishna is, how merciful Krishna is. And the more we do, the more we become impressed, and the more we realize, then we can appreciate that we received that mercy, and that we didn't deserve it. And the more we appreciate that, that look at what we were doing, look at where we were heading, look at how insensitive we were, look what we were part of, and now we are here. So these kind of meditations can bring us to the point where we become absorbed in our service. My dear friend, you are now my very same friend, Krishna is saying. Since you left me, you have become more and more materialistic, and not seeing me, you've been traveling in different forms throughout this material world. So in different forms. And each of these forms, they dictate something. And now we have human form, but then there are so many varieties of human form. And with that, and that form brings back a conditioning. And we act according to it. We just allow ourselves again and again to be ruled by our bodies. Whatever it dictates, we do. We do. We dance. Endlessly dance. What for? So this particular verse is meant to bring us to our senses, to make us realize, stop. Like in the Bhagavatam, they speak of a man and they say about the man, stop being the dancing dog in the hands of a woman, which is a strong statement of Bhagavatam. Or the other, we can turn that around also. In Dutch there was a song from Wim Sonneveld, Ze kon het lonken niet laten. Ze lonkte naar iedere man. She couldn't stop flirting. She flirted with every man. Same problem, same disease. This is the difficulty, that in the material world we have bodies, and according to these bodies we have to dance. We have to dance. And as devotees, we have to stop this materialistic dancing, this discotheque dancing and other varieties of dancing, and just dance devotionally for Krishna. And then everything becomes auspicious. Okay, I think now I've stirred it up enough. Let's see what happens. Any questions? Any comments? Parvati. Parvita, the other day, Trivikram Maharaj, he spoke to me in Czech Republic, and I was in the doorway, and he told me, he said, Prabhupada personally chastised him and said, any conversation you have from within the doorway, Prabhupada said, it will not lead to any good. So you have to come out of the door. You're still in the doorway, but it's still, sorry.
I just wanted to say that you were talking about whales. Many, many, many years ago, I was a psychic, and I had a girl with a vetch save the whale. So I asked her, are you vegetarian? And she said, no. Then I said, so you save the whale and eat the cow and the chicken? It's like saving the blacks and killing the Chinese. And she said, yeah, that makes sense.
So, are you vegan? Are you vegan?
Yes.
Why are the Hare Krishnas drinking milk if they're so merciful? If they're such strict vegetarians? Don't they know that these cows are all being killed and so on?
Well, that's someone else.
Okay, he's far away.
So, we've got to drink the milk. So
you have to speak English.
Yeah.
He is English.
We have to drink the milk because it gives us calcium. If we feed the body calcium, we see for the bones to grow.
Okay, that's on the body level. Yeah, and then one level up, you know, it gives us fine consciousness. We find consciousness. And that is so important that Srila Prabhupada stressed it again and again, we should take milk. And even if we take the milk from those cows, we offer the milk to Krishna. So therefore the cows are making spiritual advancements. Whereas the vegans don't take the milk and the cows, they don't get any benefit from it. They still get slaughtered and get no benefit. So better take the milk and offer it to Krishna. But if you don't offer it, then the best thing is not to take milk and to be vegan. So they should be vegans until they offer their milk. Yes?
The scriptures say that we're in the material world for many millions of lifetimes. So I was wondering, why does it take us so long to get the point? Why do we take so much time?
Scriptures say many millions of lifetimes, maybe even longer, Adi Bhagavanka, since time immemorial. Millions is only a big number. Is anything big? We can't think bigger, most of us. Why does it take us so long to come to our senses? Because it's so good. No, it's that the living being by nature is pleasure-seeking. And this is so deep, intrinsic to his nature, that once he is seeking for pleasure, he can't give up. And once he's become misdirected, that drive for pleasure is so strong that he just doesn't give up. He keeps on looking, he keeps on looking, and he keeps on looking. And because Krishna's material energy is a reflection of the spiritual energy, it is endless. So there's so much endless variety. So he thinks, well, maybe one of these days it will work. It will work. Maybe. So that is how Maya is capturing the living being, feeding on that fundamental nature of the soul, that the soul is pleasure seeking. So one has to cut with intelligence. One cannot wait. One cannot wait till the point where one is tired of it. And that is, we're waiting for the point that we're tired of it. That was Rajneesh, later also known as Osho, who had this philosophy that you indulge in sense gratification to a point where you become sick of it. But you never really become sick of it. Sick of it for a few days and then try again. Prabhupada said, if that would be true, then the pigs would be the biggest yogis. But we have this idea that I'll stop when I'm exhausted with material things, but we'll never become exhausted. We have to, at one point, on the strength of knowledge, say, this doesn't make sense, this is not intelligent, I'm going to stop, I'm cutting it now. And that's a little painful. So this initial cutting has to be done, otherwise we won't take to spiritual life. Yes. Yeah.
Like getting the girls married properly, kindly, guidance in family.
Yeah.
Just to protect the girls also.
Yeah. So that.
I feel that you missed it out in this.
Absolutely. Yeah, like you know, Vedic culture is a nice culture because the women are not exploited. They are not pushed there. They're pushed in the role of becoming saintly and preparing for motherhood, and then producing, giving their children really something very valuable. And a good mother, even nowadays, makes a huge difference. Like my mother was better than my father, I think, and was even in the days when I was living the wild life, her good sense was always with me. You know, I saw people taking so many drugs and losing their brains, and I thought, you know, this is stupid because of my mom. So a good mother is very important, and that's what we want in our movement. But the karmic world is trying to exploit women, you know, bad girl, bad boy shirts, you know. That's what it's about. Yeah, be a bad girl. Come on, you know, you're a bad girl too. God, just do it, God.
Your explanation implies
Your
explanation implies that every woman wants to be a mother.
My explanation implies that every woman wants to be a mother. I think deep down within every woman there is a motherly tendency, and that must be encouraged in culture. That is something positive. Of course, in modern society, sometimes that tendency is buried under so many layers of false ego and false roles that are imposed. You know, like you have women that have PhDs and smoke cigars. Right? That may not, and have a motorbike, they may not want to be mothers. That could be, but that is just layers of false ego on top. Pardon me.
There's always exceptions. So when there are children, in the Vedic times, there are yoginis who are sitting in the forest.
Yeah. But they're still a mother in a sense, you know, that they may not be a biological mother and have children, but they still have a motherly aspect in their nature. And that is still being recognized and still to be cultivated. Even in saintly ladies who remain celibate for life, they still should be motherly.
I want to mention something about, you know, women's latent. When I was young, the mothers at home, they were just drinking tea and talking all day and cleaning the house to take care of the children. And now they have to work and clean the house and cook and hardly see the children. And that is women's lip, if it's more for the men's profit than for the women's peace of mind, and that they're better off. Actually, they work harder now and they're completely stressed out because they hardly see the child. and they have no time to clean the house.
Yeah. Anyway, the Vedic culture is a supportive culture. The culture from which those women try to liberate themselves is an oppressive culture. And so it's understandable that they tried for that. Anyway, in our movement, we have to try and reintroduce the proper culture. And that may take us a few generations. And we still don't know how to deal properly with one another. In human relationships. And that's like one of the areas in our movement where we really have to grow and mature. I think. 9 o'clock. Thank you very much, Shri Prabhupada. Kijai.